Hello, and welcome to Mentor Dino. I'm your host, Caitlin Riffsier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. I firmly believe that architecture, engineering, and construction professionals can achieve true success by embracing human skills as their guiding principle. So each week, I interview amazing professionals in and around the AEC industry as a way to share stories, inspiration, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, we'd love to have you join our community. So if you like this episode, please do me a favor and hit subscribe, like, or leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own career journey. So let's dive in. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I would like to welcome John Ilo Jr., president of Cascade Construction Products in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much, John, for taking the time to speak with me today.
You're welcome, Caitlin. Thank you for having me.
So I always start off with the loaded question. And do you mind introducing yourself to let my listeners know a little bit about how you got to be president of Cascade and kind of your education background that built up to it?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So again, I'm John Ilo Jr., Cascade Construction Products. Our business was founded in 1989 by my father, also named John Ilo. I joined him in 91 after I graduated from the University of Pittsburgh. I got a bachelor's degree in communications and a minor in economics. So I jokingly refer to my degree as a BS and BS, since I'm now a salesman. all kidding aside, this has been a very rewarding career. And as I started with my dad, like a lot of people in the construction industry in general, let alone the rep business, it's been a wonderful journey over the years, working with him and sitting where we are today. And in 2004 is when we made our business transition. And at the time we were incorporated, and we were actually in the downsizing mode due to the economy. So when I took over and became president, we changed the name to Cascade Construction Products, changed over to an LLC, and then we ultimately now operate the business out of an office that I added onto our house. Since we don't have any walk-in trade or see people here, it's at the time proved to be the best move, especially with a young child in grade school. So it worked out very well for my wife and I.
Yeah. And how did, I guess, studying communications and economics, how did you decide to study that in college, I guess, is my first question.
The way I got into communications was I didn't have the grades to get into the business school at Pitt. So in college, I actually worked in my dad's manufacturing business, and he was in sales, was the sales end of their company that they owned and operated here in Pittsburgh for a number of years. And I just enjoyed the sales process and watching things there and spending a couple summers in different departments. Realized that I wanted to actually go work in that business, which at the time was manufacturing skylights. And then when the business route changed to communications, I just thought that would be the best avenue to learn a little more about sales from a education standpoint and not just from practical experience.
Yeah. And then, so now Cascade is more of a product rep rather than manufacturing. How did that transition go? Were you trying to find products to represent while still fabricating?
No, the way that worked is, I might have been a sophomore in college or freshman in college when my dad's company, he and his partner were approached by a Fortune 500 company at the time, Butler Manufacturing, the pre-engineered metal building people. They were looking to add a metal frame skylight to their Vistawall division, which at the time had just acquired a plastic skylight company. So his company was actually purchased and they sold it to Butler Manufacturing while I was still in college. And the way they used to sell their product all over the country was through independent reps. And that's where he came up with the idea of starting our rep business. And by the time I joined him in 91, he had, maybe six or seven lines already in the portfolio and was getting things kind of off the ground and promoting to local architects and contractors.
Gotcha. And what valuable insights did you guys gain from shifting from being manufacturing to a rep side? Because now you're more in between product and design and construction team. How does coming from that side help?
Well, his transition was wasn't that difficult. People thought it might have been, but he the sleepless nights and the constant travel and the pressure of, you know, at the time when he sold the business, they had 125 employees, feeding 125 families, and the travel schedule all over the country was very stressful. So his transition was very easy. He went from feeding 125 people to just feeding one, which was himself. And then I joined him, so then it was two. So it was still a lot easier to manage. But the real benefit that we have is, or at least I think we have, is that we understand that side better than almost any rep possibly could, because that's what my dad's orientation was, as the manufacturer. Not every rep firm has that benefit. They either come up into the rep business or come from contractors, or in some cases come from architectural firms or engineering firms to the rep business. But our path was a little different. So the way he taught me was as if I had worked for the manufacturer my whole career. And so it was nice to have that perspective as well. Our manufacturers really appreciate it.
Yeah, because at that point you're setting up the conversations differently when you're having a conversation with a design team on how something gets fabricated and how to purchase it. I know I've appreciated the reps on, okay, you want this piece. How are we getting it there? How does it physically get made? And can it get made in that piece? Or, hey, this may be more economical and more of a standard way to approach it. And so I've always found those conversations helpful.
Yes, and then even adding one more element certainly is the installation component. When you've got a fabricator who can look at a design that you as an architect love, and we say, well, you should add this to it or you should do this because what you're designing here is either can't be installed or is going to be problematic to install, and therefore it's going to save your owner money in the long run. So that added installation benefit and having the eyes from that side of it helps as well. And I know the designers we talk to really appreciate that. We're all in the common goal of making sure we get the best job for the end user. And when that's realized as a team, architect, contractor, suppliers, makes the job so much easier. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. And how many products now do you guys represent?
In our home territory of Western Pennsylvania, we're selling for eight different manufacturers. We've kind of got a core, I would say four or five that we seem to get, make the bulk of our living with and have the bulk of the interest with from the contractors and architects, just because of their use is more common than some of the others.
Yeah. It's always more the more standard or more recognized products that at least I tend to know and then tend to get in the specs. Whereas some of the smaller guys, I just have to learn them. There's so many different options.
Sure, there are. I don't know how architects do it. You've got, you know, hundreds of products in every division times 23 divisions. There's no way you can be expected to understand and do it all. So I don't know how you pull it all together sometimes.
Sometimes I wonder too. And what do you find is the biggest challenge being a product rep?
Right now, our single most difficult thing that we have to do is when we get one of our regional sales managers from one of our product lines wants to come in and run 2 days worth of calls or 3 days worth of calls without any, at least at the time, say without knowing, okay, I've got five architects that have live projects using their product. If they just want to come in and run calls and see architects, that is our single biggest challenge, is filling up 2 days worth of calls. Getting two box lunches is very easy. Every architectural firm wants and needs the credit, but what do we do for the rest of the morning and the rest of the afternoon when an architect can't fit something into either education or billable hours? Right now, that's our biggest challenge. And that was a big challenge pre-COVID. Post-COVID, with, you know, the working at home or the remote is made it even more difficult.
Yeah, just to be able to see what we're working on and probably the more difficult parts when we need the information, because there's so much information we're distilling. And I guess you can't wait for us all the time to say, hey, I need this information. What can we do? A lot of it's like you need some stuff ahead of time, so you know the information's there when I have to make a decision. But a lot of times I'm not mentally there to make a decision until I have to be. So it's definitely hard.
Yeah. Or if I know I've got a regional manager coming in the second week of April, the project you're working on for the next couple of months may not even have that product on there. And then you've got deadlines to meet. So we respect that time. It's very rare that we reach out to somebody to come in and have a meeting that they say, man, your timing's perfect. I'm getting ready to design XYZ. We would love to sit down and talk about it. It doesn't happen enough. So right now that is our, you know, single biggest challenge is filling those couple days for a manufacturer when they want to come in and run calls.
Yeah. And are those you're trying to do, since you said calls, are they all calls that you're trying to make, or are you trying to run around the city to different firms?
We're trying to get in-person visits. Yes, they want to see people. They want to show maybe a 10 or 15 minute, say, update PowerPoint presentation if it's a small group, or even just sit down and talk one-on-one on what's new with their particular product or why you should consider using this product on your future work.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. That would be one of the hardest things in getting in everywhere. Plus, we get so full because a lot of the times people are calling to get lunch and learn scheduled months out in advance. So it's, you know, a last minute, hey, I'm going to be there on Friday. Let's go run around.
It is challenging. It is very tough. Very tough. Like I said, they come in for 2 days. It's the products that we're usually running the most often with. The products are exciting to the architects anyway. It's not a challenge to get, if it's 2 days, get two box lunches. But outside of that, it can be a challenge. No doubt about it.
Definitely. Do you have any advice for design professionals trying to figure out what products to review for their projects?
This was the question that you sent me that kind of stumped me the most, because I do, but I had to think about the answer, I think, three different times, because I want to be as objective as possible. My first easy answer was pick up the phone and call me, because we can help you. We're going to steer you the right direction. We're going to be very objective. We're going to detail and write a specification that others can meet, so it's not proprietary, which is, again, very important for the building owners and competitive bidding. That was my first response. But what I found, especially that's evolved from when I first started working with my dad, is most of the time an architect, the first thing they would do when they were looking for, let's just say a skylight, for example, you usually went to your library shelf, which they don't exist anymore, or you went to your head spec writer and said, in this space, who do you typically specify or who do you use? What reps do you have I can consult with? That has evolved to first thing you do is go on the internet and research skylights. And in most good manufacturers, you can design, you can probably budget, and you can specify a skylight. And so what we're finding today is by the time we get that phone call looking for advice, the architect has already done an awful lot of research. And you know an awful lot more than the architects that would call us 20 years ago to have that meeting. So you pretty much had a direction set. So I would advise young and upcoming architects to take advantage of all that technology that's out there. Do your own research. And the nice thing is you can do it in off hours. Do the research, and then no matter what you do or what you see on the internet and use for your designing, reach out to the local rep. And even if it's just, hey, take a look at this and make sure I'm not doing something wrong, or make sure I'm not picking this product that I think is the best you have to offer, not realizing that it might also be 10 times the cost of something else that we do that is perfectly suitable for the project. I would always, that's what I would suggest. And I would suggest, don't just take my word for it. Check with one of my competitors as well. Call them and have two people look at it. So to see if you're getting a similar story and if it jives with what you came up with doing your own research.
Yeah, and I think that's important to note, to reach out just to even say, am I doing this right? Because when I started out my career, there was a lot of, hey, go call a rep, go call this person, call this senior engineer. And being somebody fresh out of school at the time, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am just like a little girl in a big pool, and I don't want people to know that I don't know something. And it took me a while to just get over and acknowledge I'm not going to know everything. And it's okay. And to leverage you as an actual resource that knows even more, even if I've started to do some research. So I think a lot of young professionals need to get over that hump after they do the initial research and not just stop there and say they're done, to actually go fact check and call up the reps. You guys aren't scary. You're there to
help.
We're not.
Yeah. And I'll give you a great example. And off record, I don't know if we're allowed to use trade names or product names. I can refrain from doing that.
I can always edit it out, but.
Okay. Well, I've got a great example why somebody should check, even if it's right before your documents are going out the door. So we worked with a firm who, they were on our manufacturer's website multiple times, downloading things. A lot of the manufacturers keep track of that and they send that to the reps. And it's up to us to be very judicious how we use it. We don't want to be stalking designers and calling every time we see a download. So we do use a great deal of restraint there. But I could see where this job was going based on what was being downloaded. And then I did reach out to see if this particular architect, who we do know, needed some help. And I didn't get a response. And then 3 weeks go by and I see a project out for bid with this firm and with this particular product. So I put two and two together and realized it was the same thing. However, they pulled the best of the best from one of our manufacturers, and they put two sentences in the specification that ended up taking the product, which would cost X, and they put in a product that was now four times X. And it wasn't needed because it was not in a climate that needed a particular high-performing light transmitting insulation in these series of windows. They could get every bit the performance they wanted at the regular pricing had they not written two sentences in the specification, because when they did their own editing, they saw this word and said, mm-hmm. Oh, what is this? And when they researched, they said, wow, this is the greatest stuff. And it is, but it comes at a huge premium in cost. And their client did not have the budget for it.
So is that something that everybody came back with crazy high numbers? Or I know sometimes when like a very high-end product or very high-performing product is listed, sometimes there's mm-hmm. not approved equals. And so then other people are saying, well, you can't do this, so here's this other product instead, Mr. Contractor.
Well, in that particular instance, it was proprietary and it was on a public bid. And so we knew it wasn't going to fly. So before some of my competitors asked the question, I reached out to the architect and let them know what was in the spec and what we thought was what we had talked about and what we thought was going to be best. So they actually issued an addendum making those changes prior. However, had that been done before the job was out to bid, they wouldn't have had to write that addendum changing their own specification. Mm-hmm. They could have done it prior to it being on the street and everybody seeing the change being made.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of products once I want to see what a drawing is and just be able to download it. And so everybody's tracking who's seeing what, as long as I can get it for free and see what's going on. But sometimes then I don't end up using the product. So I feel bad saying, just kidding, I don't need your product anymore. Or I didn't need to download this, I'm going over here. I always feel bad when I shift lanes and don't want their product anymore, or I just need one dimension, but I have to download the whole packet of information, and then I get the follow-up emails. And let me help you with this. I'm like, no, I've done this before. I just need a single dimension that I couldn't remember. So, but no,
and
that's...
If reps out there don't, you know, get upset that you say that after you've downloaded something, then you shouldn't be working with them anyway, because we all understand that things change, designs change, and we all know that our manufacturers require all that information. I actually wish some of them wouldn't, because people do get bombarded with follow-up emails or spam emails, and I know that leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. So some of the manufacturers, I wish they would not track.
Yeah,
the reps really do need to use those leads, as I mentioned, with some restraint and use them judiciously.
Yeah, no, they're not usually too bad. It's usually the automatic ones that you can tell are coming from just a website of no man's land versus I can tell when a rep is sending me something. So.
Oh, that's good.
And it's more fun whenever I actually know the rep, because then I can be like, hey, I'm not using your product, but are you going to this event this week or what's going on? You can get a life update.
There you go.
Do you have any advice, kind of circling everything back with communication and the design team? Do you have any advice on communication between design professionals and manufacturers?
I do. And again, this is another one that I struggled with, because the easy answer is believe everything I say and use all my products in all your buildings. But that's not very practical. I think the best thing would be, to your point, and you're very good at this, and there are others in town that are, is whenever we're reaching out to you, if it's a follow-up from a download, if it's follow-up from an event or, say, Build Pittsburgh, where we talked about a particular project, even if when we're following up, even just a simple reply or a return of a call, return of a text, or even an email, even if it's we're no longer using your project or the project is off the job, then we'll stop harassing you if we know that you're not using us. But they should never, I don't think anybody should ever be embarrassed if something's changed and you're not using a product that you originally engaged with us over or reached out to us. And then, as I mentioned, you know, earlier, is communication. I almost jumping ahead about advice to the, you know, career professionals. Communication is so important, and the way it's presented. One of the things I've learned from mentors over the years is keep everything short, to the point, conveying a very clear message, and try to refrain from using, hey, I know this sounds weird, but using fancy words. If you're talking to somebody and they've got to, you know, look up on Google what a particular word means, then the message is just lost. And I think that can be applied whether you're communicating with us, you're communicating with coworkers, a boss, a client, contractors, just keeping things very clear, short, and to the point makes it so much easier. And asking questions, especially for young folks. You know, the old adage of we never learn anything when we're talking really rings true. When you listen to other people, you'll learn an awful lot. And if there's something you don't understand, ask the question. There's, again, another adage of the only dumb question is the one that's not asked really rings true for me, is don't be afraid to ask questions. Never assume anything in our business or any business, especially when you're communicating with people.
Yeah, assumptions are dangerous.
Very dangerous. When you spread the word assume out, it spells three words, A-S-S, you and me. Assuming things will definitely make an ass out of you and me if you make an assumption.
I'm going to use that acronym. Maybe I'll put it, make it as a poster or
something. I have a big, I'm looking at the picture on my wall that I wrote out in black Sharpie about 20 years ago when I made that mistake and I look like an absolute fool.
You always got to learn something.
That's right. We learn the hard way.
But that ties into my next question. So over the years, what are some lessons learned that have really stuck with you besides the poster in front of you?
Listening is a big one. As I mentioned, I'll never learn anything if I'm talking. Listening to people at every in our business on every end of the food chain, because everyone we're dealing with on a job has a different need. The person I'm selling to, the contractor, has one need. You as the architect has another need. Your consulting engineer, again, different. Owner, different. And then my manufacturer and their suppliers behind us all have different needs. And so when you're listening to everybody, you can learn an awful lot. And that really helps solve everybody's problem very quickly, because we're not perfect. We're not doing things in a perfect world. Problems happen, and solving them quickly is the best way to do it. And if you understand everybody's issue on a project when it involves a problem, then you walk away with a very satisfactory client, very satisfactory response and result.
Yeah. And that ties, you've been doing great on tying into all my questions today. When communicating design intent in the construction documents, whether it be drawings or specifications, do you find there's either typical trip ups, or do you have any advice for design professionals putting together those documents that you can understand them better and the manufacturer can understand it better for better bids? And
yeah, that's a tough one. It's mm-hmm. Again, you've got 23 divisions and how many products in a division? It's difficult. I would stress again, whatever information you're using to develop your documents. Again, not using the assume word. Most people out there are using Revit, which is a fantastic tool to design a building. Working with those manufacturers that have Revit models, plugging things in that way, converting them obviously to your two-dimensional documents. But with that comes a little bit of a caution. Some of our manufacturers don't do as good a job of keeping their websites updated. And it's embarrassing when somebody designs around a product and specifies it only to find out it's no longer available. Mm-hmm. Or a component of a product is no longer available. Some manufacturers, to get traffic and advertising, will put things out there that are in, say, research and development and maybe not available right now. I can't tell you how many times we're told by architects, well, your website shows that you're automating this operable glass wall. And when I say it's not available, they don't believe me, because they, like all of us in our lives, when we see something out there published in the public, we assume that it's available. And mm-hmm. in this particular instance, this particular designer did not want to believe me that this product was not available because they found it on the website. So again, I would just say, using all those tools, it's important for checking, and especially before your documents go out the door, check with your reps that handle these products and have somebody look at it.
Yeah. And it's always hard when you have to, if it's a bigger glazing mullion system and trying to put in a basis of design detail, if an alternative gets picked, that detail may need to change because we did all the work based on that particular system and how that goes in. And if we've got to swap it out, what does that change? Everything. But
It is problematic when you have that situation, especially when it's not a privately funded job where you can insist on one brand or one profile. That's where you've got a big job ahead of you. We don't envy it. I know people complain a lot about documents being what they are today, good or bad, or if they are bad, people complain. But you just don't have a very easy job to do when it comes to coordinating and all of that.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to have what I call Revit vomit everywhere. Revit is a great tool, but you could elevate and detail every little section of the model if you wanted to, but you have to look at it from the lens of the contractor who's needing to build it, the trades that are looking to put it together, and the manufacturers bidding it and putting it out there. So you have to kind of look at it in a different lens, and just because you can create everything doesn't mean you need to or should.
No, I agree. And, you know, it's along those lines, I'm really surprised, and I see it in other parts of our territory. So outside of Western PA, we sell in Ohio, we sell in West Virginia. Years ago, the state of Ohio changed all of their public bidding procedures, where they no longer require a building owner to go out to the traditional public bidding method that we see here in the state of Pennsylvania. And one of them is design build. The other one is CM at risk. And CM at risk seems to be the most popular choice in the state of Ohio, especially for the public schools. And I'm really surprised we have not seen that catch on more here than it has over there, because it puts the architect and contractor together so early in the process. And in a lot of those cases, especially design build, the architect doesn't have to get down to that last little T and I and period and exclamation point in their specification and their documents to have it bid, have it be on budget, and then build it. And I'm just surprised that hasn't caught on here like it has in other states.
Yeah, I rarely have a project that I'm in design only for the entire design phase. I'm rarely not having a contractor on board early anymore to help just kind of cross check. Let's do cost estimating at each phase along the way. Or even if I've got questions on, hey, this is going to be tricky. How would you build it? What other products have I not looked into yet? And try to brainstorm with them through design challenges and construction issues while in design. So it's not going to be costly change orders in the end, and we can come out with a better product.
Yeah, I think design has assist that process has helped an awful lot. And I know we are seeing more of that here in our territory, but I'm still a little surprised design build or CM at risk hasn't been a little more prevalent project delivery method here in our market.
Someday.
Maybe.
A little bit of a tangent. Have you seen from your products, I know with COVID, we hit a lot of lead time issues. Have you found kind of that landscape of lead times changing a lot faster than they used to between lead times and pricing of products? Have you found that to be another segment of your position in terms of helping architects and contractors?
Yes, a short answer. We've all learned very quickly, and we're trying to advise people of what things, you know, they either should avoid or what things they might want to embrace to avoid some of those issues. Within about the last 8 to 12 months, we've finally seen things. Certainly, pricing has stabilized. Lead times seem to have stabilized as well. We haven't seen pricing come down in a lot of our products. And I know a lot of, I've had that conversation recently from people as to why. And the answer that we're getting is, yes, aluminum, for example, raw glass, for example, has dropped from what it was, say, 2 years ago. But unfortunately, the cost of labor, the cost of gasoline, transportation has all gone up. So there has been an unfortunate offset in an awful lot of what should have been less costly finished products in our market. Lead times have fortunately stabilized, but and we've been lucky that our manufacturers haven't been. I've heard a lot more horror stories in other parts of our construction world, and our manufacturers have been pretty good about that. I think the biggest problem we've had was just with some products that come from overseas and the issues with ports. But Caitlin, we've been very fortunate that our manufacturers haven't been in that bad a shape compared to some other horror stories that I'm still hearing, but ones we've heard in particular and still carry on.
Yeah, because I was under construction during most of probably the later part of COVID, but it was just a fit out. So I didn't have exterior conditions and exterior products to deal with, but interior was getting calls for copper shielding and, hey, you better review this submittal because price is going to go up and it's going to charge the owner $1 million with the amount of copper we have. And so I'd be running in to make sure any submittal, like, hey, are there any issues coming up? And after that, it's, I know when I started my career, it's like, hey, look in the RS Means book to how much something costs to compare. I'm like, I don't want to trust any publication anymore because things can change as quickly as the stock market. And so I know even if I sit through a lunch and learn presentation, I don't even want to see dollar amounts because I know it's not going to be accurate. I'd rather say, hey, here are products. Here's your good, better, and best level. And hey, it goes from the good price versus 2 times versus 6 times the cost. So I can understand that sense to when I'm designing something. But yeah, lead times and costs were definitely a big learning experience.
It's been a challenge, and I've been at it a few more years than you, and I found myself getting reeducated on a weekly basis, and finally realized that everything I used to know about cost and our manufacturer's lead time that I could just rattle off the top of my head, I've decided to forget all of it, and I simply tell people, I'll check.
Yep.
And see, let you know. Yes. I don't trust anything anymore with changes that take place that I don't even think of.
Yeah. I'm just trying to keep track of it all. Some things are not worth keeping to memory.
Yes, exactly. And it's amazing how things you just don't think of impact your business. And even aside from what we sell and do, was maybe 4 or 5 years ago when I started hearing people complain about the cost of simple, basic steel shapes and the cause of the cost going through the roof was Amazon and all the facilities they were building, just driving the cost of simple steel square tubing, angles, bars to make shelves to store goods in all of their distribution centers when they were building like crazy. Something that never even crossed my mind.
Yeah. And
now we're paying 2 times the cost or 3 times the cost for just very basic stuff, just because one consumer was dominating the market and buying all the product.
Yeah. And I'm sure locking in on getting a certain quantity by a certain time and on this schedule, and then just eats up the whole line.
And then the one or two suppliers that were locked into them, all their competitors took full advantage of it because they could service everybody else. And then they just
jacked
their pricing right up. Yep, exactly.
Architects need to learn that lesson sometimes. Everybody's busy. And then shifting over to organizations, has there been an organization that has really left an impact on your career journey?
I won't name any of them because the organizations I think of that have left an impact were all bad ones. And so I've learned how to recognize very deceiving companies, crappy companies. So I've learned from organizations in a bad way. So I really didn't want to discuss that. What I've learned positively, they've all been people. Other rep firms around the country that are the next generation ahead of me, between say my dad's age and my age, they've been mentors of mine over the years. A lot of sales managers that we've run calls with and been in project meetings and discussing details and specifying things and closing work, selling work, and coordinating all that. That's where I've learned the most from those two kind of entity of person across my career. Aside from my dad, obviously.
I know can't I give him all the credit.
I just glossed over him, but that's like any of us that come into the business, you learn from your immediate mentor. And in this case, it's my father.
Yeah. You can give him some credit.
Yeah, I'll give him some credit. He won't listen to a podcast, so he won't know he's getting the credit though.
It's a lot like when people post like happy birthday to their parents or grandparents on social media, and you know they're not on there. I'm like, why? They're not on here. They're not going to see it. And I like always wrapping up my podcast with this final question, and it's what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
I wrote down five things for this, and a lot of it we've already talked about. So
you
in
can
summary,
repeat it. Yeah.
Yeah, the first one and the biggest one is listen. I can't say it enough. Or you're not learning anything if your mouth is moving. Listen to what people are saying. Ask questions. I know some people, some people may think they don't want to be embarrassed, especially if a supervisor or a client is sitting in the room. But the only dumb question is the one that's not asked. And I've even told people, if you think it's a question you shouldn't ask because people should say they're going to think you should know it, a very simple preface is, I've never had experience with XYZ. What does this mean? How do I do that? It very clearly sends a message to the audience that this is just something you haven't seen or done before. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're asking the question. So always never assume anything. That's just a recipe for disaster. I still catch myself today, even though I live by that motto and I've got it sitting on my wall, that I catch myself doing that. And that's just going to get you in trouble. And then I know this is a tough one, but, always return calls, emails, text, even if it's just to tell somebody, no, I'm not interested in your product. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have an application on this particular building. Because you never know when you're going to need that person again or run across that person again. Or another one of the crude sayings in this business, the rear end or the toes that you step on today might be connected to the rear end you've got to kiss tomorrow. They may, that vendor you blow off and don't answer may be working for an owner someday, and then you're going to be looking for them to get work. So I would tell people to always be mindful of that. And that just adds to your professionalism. Even if you take 30 seconds to reply to somebody and just tell them, I can't see you. I'm not interested in your product, or it doesn't have an application right now on this particular building.
Yeah. Or if you're putting out a fire quickly in construction, and we didn't have your product listed, but now I've got an issue and now your product can help me out, but I need an answer tomorrow. I can't go ignore you for months, then all of a sudden want some information from you immediately. It doesn't work both ways.
No. And along those lines, I know that we're trying to get your attention and get you to put our products on a building you're designing, but it is a two-way street. We're all in this together. And then the last one had to do with the communication, whether it's talking, email, a text message, writing an article, however you're communicating with people. It's so important, in my opinion, to keep it short, to the point, and very clear. There's nothing that I dread more than when I open up an email from somebody and I see paragraph after paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there. Just you roll your eyes and just dread needing to look at it. So there are ways to get a message across in a very short, concise way. And that's the most effective way of communicating for everybody, in my opinion, and in my experience.
Yeah. I feel like if I start writing paragraphs to either a rep or another engineer or architect I'm coordinating with, if it starts turning into paragraphs, I pick up the phone or have a meeting and be like, all right, if I can't get it done in bullet points and some graphical snapshots off my screen, then I pick up the phone or set up a meeting just to talk them through it.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to say. If it's got to go that long, then it's better over the phone or an in-person meeting for sure.
Yeah. And you can always summarize in bullet points. I know I typically, if I'm talking through a particular product or situation, I would ask them to, hey, can you send me some bullet points on what we discussed so I make sure I don't forget what we talked about? And so that's the important part, which is why I like emails and having it tracked in case I forget when I project hop around. But no.
And I know a lot of people don't like what we're doing here, Zoom calls, Microsoft Teams, but in lieu of going to an office, which I'm sure some people are still working from home, architect-wise, a rep needing to drive across town 45 minutes to an hour to have a 15-minute meeting, which could easily be done over Zoom, sharing drawings and having this back and forth. Lots of problems get solved that way. And if you're worried about time efficiency or speed of having to get things done. Again, take advantage of the technology. We're not opposed to it at all. Any rep that is, that insists on meeting in person, they may not be the right one to work with.
Yeah. There are times where it's better to be in person, but it saves a lot of money when we can just do a video call and share drawings and markup together than it would be if I don't have a local project and I got to go be on planes, pay for a hotel. That's a lot more expense to either my firm or the owner at that point for something that could be a phone call discussion or show your camera and let me see what you're looking at. So,
yep, I agree. And I think that's where flexibility comes in on all parties. Having flexibility in the way messages get delivered, problems get solved is, again, another key to being successful in all walks of life, not just in this business.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
You're good. But I want to thank you again, John, so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I know it was very delayed and finding time to make our conversation happen.
Better late than never. You're welcome, Caitlin. Yeah. I'm happy to help and happy to continue to help as you continue to progress and do things.
Yeah. Thank you so much, John. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.